On radio, online and mobile. You're with SBS Radio.
This is SBS World News Radio. I'm Greg Dyatt.
And I'm Omar Debarge. Coming up, a deal to resolve the citizenship fiasco, with MPs given until December 1st to prove they're eligible to remain in Parliament.
I'm not surprised that the messiness.
Are they or are they not citizens of other countries? And where they are, dual nationals, what reasonable steps have they taken to renounce citizenship of another country?
Also coming up tonight, support for Malcolm Turnbull slips in the latest news poll.
I'm not surprised that the messiness of the last few weeks is reflected in the news poll. Malcolm Turnbull is providing strong and effective leadership to our team. We're getting on with it.
And we'll have a wrap of the weekend in sport.
All those stories and more coming up in the next 30 minutes.
Good evening. With the news at 6 o'clock, I'm Omar Debarge. At least 207 people have been killed in Iraq and Iran after a powerful magnitude 7.3 earthquake hit the region as rescuers search for dozens trapped under rubble. At least 164 of those killed in Iran, and officials expect the toll to rise when search and rescue teams reach remote areas. The earthquake was felt in several provinces of Iran, but the hardest hit province was Kermanshah, 15 kilometres from the Iraq border, which has announced 3 days of mourning. Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull has held talks with a number of world leaders on the sidelines of the Association of Southeast Asian Nations in the Philippines. North Korea was high on the agenda during a joint meeting with United States President Donald Trump and Japan's Prime Minister Shinzo Abe. Speaking in Manila, he said they're committed to ensuring maximum economic pressure is put on the regime to bring it to its senses.
Key economic player there is, of course, China. And I was pleased to meet earlier today with Premier Li and again discuss the measures that China is taking, which are without precedent in China's history with North Korea, to bring that pressure to bear so that the regime stops its reckless conduct, which is putting the safety and stability of the whole region at risk.
Labor and the coalition have struck a deal with the aim to bring an end to the dual citizenship saga that's plagued Parliament. Senators will be able to voluntarily disclose their citizenship status by December the 1st. The manager of government business, Christopher Pyne, says it's a good development and a sensible way forward.
If there is a doubt, or if they have a reason in the past, a parent, for example, with the citizenship of another country, then they have to clear that doubt up by showing how they went about relinquishing that citizenship, or what the laws are that show that they aren't actually entitled to any dual citizenship.
Mr. Pyne says talks for a similar disclosure in the lower house are ongoing. Meanwhile, the Senate has elected Liberal Scott Ryan to replace former President Stephen Parry, who resigned after it was revealed he was a dual British citizen. The former Special Minister for State received 53 votes, and Green Senator Peter Fitwish Wilson, 11. New One Nation Senator Fraser Anning has sensationally quit the party to sit as an independent, only hours after taking his seat in Parliament. Senator Anning was sworn in the morning, flanked by crossbench Senators David Lionhelm and Corey Bernardi, rather than One Nation leader Pauline Hanson, or the party's other senators. Senator Hanson revealed he left the party after his swearing in, saying he would stand as an independent until something else came along. Senator Anning replaced Malcolm Roberts, who was disqualified because of his dual citizenship. To sport now, and Tim Cahill has declared himself fit to play in the Socceroos World Cup qualifying playoff second leg against Honduras. The champion striker nursed an ankle injury during the goalless first match in San Pedro Sula, but he says he's looking forward to playing his role on Wednesday night in Sydney.
This journey and the story has been amazing. I think the way that we've gone about it has been exceptional. And yes, we could have qualified earlier, but I think this is just the way it's meant to be, and we won't get ahead of ourselves because the job's definitely not done. But one thing we are is determined to fly the flag and get as many fans out there as possible. I pretty much feel in my heart and know that this is going to be a full house, and the whole nation's going to stop for this one game, regardless of which sport you support.
Meanwhile, Socceroos coach Ange Postecoglou says he's delighted the match has attracted a near sell-out crowd, but is nervous about the quality of the pitch, given a Monster Jam motoring event was held at the venue last month. In cricket, Australian women's coach Matthew Mott has accused England of purposefully drawing Sunday's Ashes test, saying they didn't have the intent to win. England batted through the entire last day, drawing the match to keep itself in the series. But it must win all three of the 2020s, which begin on Friday, to regain the urn. Sunday's result marked the 88th draw in the 139-test history of women's cricket, prompting calls for a fifth day to be added to come in line with the men. Australian captain Rachel Ains is among those asking questions.
Well, I think we would have got a result if there was a fifth day in this test match. So despite the fact that the wicket was flat, my feeling is that we would have got a result in this match if there was a fifth day. So, in some respects, it would be nice to extend it.
And now a look at tomorrow's weather. Perth, mostly sunny, 29. Adelaide, late showers and storms at 35. Melbourne, possible afternoon shower at 34. Hobart, hot and sunny, 31. Canberra, partly cloudy at 26. It's also partly cloudy in Wollongong at 22. Sydney, a little cloud there as well, 23. Similar conditions for Newcastle at 22. We can expect partly cloudy conditions in Brisbane, 26. Shower or two in Cairns at 29. And in Darwin, showers and a possible storm at 33. And Greg, more on these stories coming up on SBS World News at 6:30.
OK, thanks, Omar. Right across Australia, this is SBS World News Radio, 7 past 6. Well, federal parliamentarians have a fortnight to sort out their citizenship with a December 1st deadline for them to publicly disclose details. The agreement between the government and the federal opposition comes on the same day as the replacements for several disqualified senators take up their posts. Andrea Nierhoff reports.
In a few weeks, voters will know which politicians have questions over their citizenship status and which don't. The government has agreed to the opposition's demand to a December 1st cut-off date for parliamentarians to disclose their citizenship and that of their parents and grandparents as part of a register proposed by the Prime Minister. Senators will also be required to reveal any foreign citizenships they may have held and give reassurances they haven't inherited another country's citizenship from a family member. The Senate will then decide if any will be referred to the High Court. The House of Representatives is expected to pass a similar resolution when it resumes on November 27th. Labor leader Bill Shorten says the deal is about fairness and transparency.
We believe in universal disclosure. We don't think that there should be one rule for one party and one rule for another. Everyone puts their material on the table, puts their case. Are they or are they not citizens of other countries? And where they are, dual nationals, what reasonable steps have they taken to renounce the citizenship of another country?
Three new senators have been sworn in to replace those recently declared ineligible. Governor-General Peter Cosgrove briefly took the place of former Senate President Stephen Parry, who stepped down amid doubts over his own citizenship.
Following the resignation of Senator the Honourable Stephen Parry as President of the Senate and as Senator for Tasmania, I'm here today to swear in new senators declared elected by the High Court on 10th November 2017.
Now ex-Special Minister of State Scott Ryan has been chosen as the new Senate President. Fraser Anning was named to replace One Nation's Malcolm Roberts. Former Democrats leader Andrew Bartlett takes the place of the Greens' Larissa Waters. And Jordan Steele John, just 23 years old, replaces former Green Senator Scott Ludlam. However, Senator Anning has announced he's leaving One Nation to become an independent. Watching the ceremony were several senators dealing with their own citizenship speculation. News the Greens will support any future High Court referrals has sparked unease over who could be next. Senator Steele John says the situation is out of control.
It's a bit of a mess at the moment, to be honest. They're dropping like flies. Every morning we wake up to another story of somebody having a bit of a familial revelation.
The citizenship debacle has taken a toll, with the latest news poll showing Labor leading the government by 10 clear points in the two-party preferred results, 55% to 45%. And it has reduced the government to being one vote short of a majority. Labor's request that any of its MPs and senators under speculation not be referred prompted accusations of a double standard, with the government threatening to hold a November 27th vote on the cases of two Labor MPs. Leader of the House, Christopher Pyne, says he hopes this new agreement will put an end to the crisis once and for all.
But I hope that by the time the Parliament resumes, we will have an agreement with Labor for a process. Of course, that will include members who've already indicated they were dual citizens on the day of nominations closing for the last election, satisfying the Parliament that they are not in fact ineligible to sit.
Cabinet Minister Christopher Pyne, ending that report by Andrea Nierhoff. Well, the ASEAN summit is well underway in the capital of the Philippines. It's looking at the economic, security and cultural development of the region, with North Korea and the South China Sea dispute the main discussion points of this year's talks. Here's Tara Cosoletto.
As world leaders pour into Manila for the two-day ASEAN summit, Philippines President Rodrigo Duterte has called for calm around the South China Sea dispute. China has claimed many areas in the resource-rich waterway, but Vietnam, the Philippines, Taiwan, Malaysia and Brunei have contesting claims. In August, foreign ministers from Southeast Asia and China adopted a negotiating framework for a code of conduct in the region. They hailed the move as progress, but many critics see it as China's tactic to buy time and consolidate power. With leaders at the summit expected to agree on a procedural step to cool tensions in the disputed area, United States President Donald Trump has offered to facilitate talks.
South China Sea, as you know, we're looking at together. If I can help mediate or arbitrate, please let me know. I know we've had a dispute for quite a while with China. If I can help in any way, I'm a very good mediator and a very good arbitrator. I have done plenty of it from both sides, so if I can help you, let me know.
But President Duterte suggests the subject would be better left alone altogether.
China is the number one economic powerhouse, and we have to be friends. The other hotheads would like us to confront China and the rest of the world. The South China Sea is better left untouched. Nobody can afford to go to war. Either the big powers, Russia, China, Britain, or the United States. It can ill afford a violent confrontation.
President Trump has also signaled North Korea's nuclear program as a priority in discussions. The U.S. president says there will need to be help from other countries in the region to stop the situation from escalating.
The North Korean situation continues to be a problem. I think that China, as you know, we saw maybe China yesterday and the day before, and President Xi, I think, is going to be a tremendous help. I hope Russia, likewise, will be a tremendous help. I think that can make a big difference.
Australian Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull, who is also in Manila for the summit, says he will also focus on concerns over North Korea, as well as ways to combat terrorism financing. He has not said whether he will discuss refugee resettlement. Mr. Turnbull is expected to have bilateral talks with President Trump, as well as leaders from China, Japan, India and Southeast Asia on the sidelines of the summit.
Tara Cosoletto with that report. Still to come on the show, support slips for Malcolm Turnbull in the latest news poll.
I'm not surprised that the messiness of the last few weeks is reflected in the news poll. Malcolm Turnbull is providing strong and effective leadership to our team. We're getting on with it since the last election.
That story coming up, 14 past 6. This is SBS World News Radio. Malcolm Turnbull may be overseas to attend several high-powered talks, but back home, the political week has got off to a rocky start. While only the upper house is sitting this week, all members of Parliament are having their say on some of the big issues. With the ongoing citizenship debacle continuing to plague Parliament, Mr. Turnbull's popularity has taken a dive in the latest news poll. As Aileen Phillips reports, it's just days out from the results of the same-sex marriage postal survey.
Malcolm Turnbull has suffered another blow in the polls, with support for his government and approval of him as Prime Minister slipping further. The latest news poll shows Labor's opened up a 10-point two-party preferred lead over the coalition, 55% to 45%. Opposition leader Bill Shorten's closing in as the preferred Prime Minister, now only 2 points below Mr Turnbull's 36% after the Prime Minister suffered a 5-point slump. Finance Minister Matthias Cormann says the news poll result isn't surprising given the political turmoil of recent weeks.
Clearly, the Australian people want us to work through this issue and resolve it swiftly, and that is what the government is committed to do. But in the meantime, I'm not surprised that the messiness of the last few weeks is reflected in the news poll. Malcolm Turnbull is providing strong and effective leadership to our team. We're getting on with it since the last election.
The coalition's primary vote fell by 1 point to 34%, while Labor's primary vote rose a point to 38%. Meanwhile, other polls suggest the same-sex marriage postal survey will return a yes vote. While the government will facilitate debate in Parliament on the subject if the yes vote succeeds, it says it won't guarantee much more than that. Politicians are scrambling to prepare for the next stage in the debate. Coalition MPs are pushing for laws to shield opponents from anti-discrimination action if same-sex marriage is legalised. A proposed bill would give protection to celebrants, educators, businesses and parents. Liberal Senator James Patterson is behind the latest bill, despite telling the ABC he voted in support of same-sex marriage.
But I also believe that religious liberty, freedom of conscience and freedom of speech are important rights. We're about to find out in the survey exactly how many people voted one way or the other, but I suspect 30 to 40% of Australians will vote no. Now, I don't think their votes should mean that we shouldn't have same-sex marriage in this country, but I do think that their freedoms should be protected, and I think my bill is a bill that best does that.
Fellow Liberal Dean Smith has a similar private bill ready for Parliament. It also includes exemptions so religious organisations can refuse to conduct same-sex marriages. Education Minister Simon Birmingham told Sky News he believes this bill is the appropriate and logical starting point for any debate.
It's been the one that has already been subject to parliamentary scrutiny. It was built upon the findings of a Senate inquiry, built upon the exposure draft that the Attorney-General had released.
Nearly 8 in 10 Australians who received survey forms have had their say, with a result to be announced on Wednesday. Labor leader Bill Shorten says Australians expect the Parliament to deal with marriage equality legislation before the end of the year.
If Australians vote yes on marriage equality, the one question they were asked was on marriage equality. And I think that if we were not to implement a decision on marriage equality, the nation would throw up its hands and give up on the Parliament.
And with the citizenship fiasco continuing to play out, the Senate elected a new president today. Scott Ryan was chosen to replace former President Stephen Parry, who resigned after it was revealed he was a dual British citizen. The Special Minister for State received 53 votes and Greens Senator Peter Whish-Wilson 11. Senator Ryan addressed the Australian Senate as its 25th president.
I do emphasise I'm now your servant. I now represent all senators. I'm no longer part of the executive government, and I will treat every senator on the merits of them as an individual representative of their state, regardless of party or office held.
The newly elected Senate President, Scott Ryan, ending that report by Aileen Phillips. Still to come in rugby union, Australia has begun the European leg of its end-of-year tour with a 29-21 victory over Wales in Cardiff. And coach Michael Checker is impressed with his side's character as well as their skill.
They showed what they can really do. I thought they played quite well with... And we had, obviously, a huge penalty count against us too. So we just showed a lot of character. And sometimes over here in Europe, that's just what you got to do.
We'll have a wrap of the weekend sports soon. Mental health groups have reported a big increase in the number of Australians seeking support services as the public has its say on whether to legalise same-sex marriage. The increased pressure on services is expected to continue, regardless of whether the result announced on Wednesday is no or yes. Helen Espista has the story.
Growing up homosexual was a painful experience for Sydney man Nathaniel Lynx. Negative comments he heard as a teenager forced him to repress his sexuality, and he only came out as gay at the age of 28. A decade and a half later, Nathaniel says painful memories from that time have been inflamed by the same-sex marriage postal survey.
As a gay man living in the eastern suburbs, you really do feel comfortable in your community. And, you know, with your friends and family, if you have that support, it's very easy to sort of not understand how the wider community views us. And this marriage equality debate has really shown us that 30 to 40% of the population potentially still sees us somewhat as second rate, and our relationships are second rate.
He says that's had a big impact on his mental health and the mental health of people he knows.
I think we've seen a real sort of increase in anxiety and depression, and just a weight of feeling that we had gotten so far, and that, you know, so many of us have felt comfortable, and that we were near the end of that journey of that sort of, you know, battle to win our equality. And this debate has shown us how far we still have to go.
Mental health groups have backed up the sense that people in the LGBTQI community are feeling the impact with some startling statistics. Reach Out Australia, which provides mental health support for young people, says it has seen a 40% increase in demand for services since the postal survey began. Its chief executive, Jono Nicholas, says the increased stress comes from being the focus of a public conversation, particularly with negative comments made online.
What we're hearing from young people is the nature of their anxiety is really around the public conversation itself, the sense that they're being judged, the sense that their relationships are being judged. We're hearing that there are some particular difficulties in families where different generations may have voted differently and causing some stress.
He predicts that stress will continue beyond the announcement of the result on Wednesday morning.
This will certainly lead to a sizeable minority of Australians feeling disappointed one way or the other. We expect the public conversation to continue, but also with various private members' bills going before Parliament, this will remain a live conversation. We hope it can end before Christmas. I think that's an important that we reach a conclusion quickly, and we hope that it's a positive one for young Australians.
Jono Nicholas sending that story by Helen Isbister. A reminder that you can now live stream our TV news bulletin at 6:30 each night. If you're not near a TV, just go to our website, sbs.com.au/news. Well, easily the biggest event of the weekend in sport was the Socceroos' trip to Honduras in the World Cup qualifying. The team's now back home, and all eyes are turning to Wednesday's decisive second leg in Sydney, where Australia is looking to book its fourth consecutive trip to world sport's biggest event. Here's Sunila Wasti.
If there's such a thing as winning a match without actually being victorious on the scoreboard, that's what the Socceroos did in Honduras. The first leg of their intercontinental playoff in San Pedro Sula ended in a nil-all draw, meaning victory on Wednesday night equals World Cup qualification. And the Socceroos will be chasing that victory in improved conditions. They arrived in Australia before the Honduran team, making the long journey on a luxurious charter flight. And confident defender Trent Sainsbury says they'll also have the important advantage of home support and a better quality field than was provided for the first leg.
Honduras has got a long way to go now. We're here so we can recover and be fresh. It's an advantage for us, and it will take every little advantage we can get at the moment. Coming home to a bumper crowd in Sydney, it's going to be an amazing feeling for the boys, and a great pitch is going to allow us to show our skills and the way we want to play even more on a nice surf.
A win on Wednesday night gives the Socceroos World Cup qualification. A Honduran victory or a draw where both teams score gives the visitors a spot in the World Cup at Australia's cost. The A-League was largely overshadowed this weekend, just passed by the World Cup qualifier, but don't tell that to fans of the Central Coast Mariners. Goals to Andrew Hoole and Jake McGing giving them their first win of the season, 2-0, over defending champion Sydney FC in Gosford. It was also Sydney FC's first loss of the season. Mariners coach Paul O'Conn using the upset victory to heap praise on fans of the small club.
There's more belief in us from our supporters who've been tremendous thus far, and that as many people turn up on Thursday to help us get over the line in what is another important A-League fixture.
That game on Thursday in Gosford sees the Mariners take on Adelaide United. The group stages of the Rugby League World Cup have concluded. A memorable final weekend of pool stage fixtures saw Tonga score a historic upset win over New Zealand and Samoa qualify for the knockout stage via a 14-all draw with Scotland in Cairns. The Samoans will play tournament favourites Australia on Friday night in the first quarter final, the match taking place in Darwin. The Australians did as expected, thrashing Lebanon 34 points to nil in Sydney in their final group stage match. But when you're at Australia's level in rugby league, mere victory just isn't enough. Captain Cameron Smith, critical of the refereeing, most notably what he sees as referees allowing defending teams to slow the match down. He says Australia may have to indulge in a bit of the slowing down business themselves.
There's a lot of things that defenders are getting away with, but both teams are playing under the same rules, so we just have to do it back to the opposition.
Smith saying the win over Lebanon was one of the slowest games he's ever played in. And in rugby union, Australia has begun the European leg of its end-of-year tour with a 29-21 victory over Wales in Cardiff. The Wallabies overcoming captain Michael Hooper having to leave the field for 10 minutes in the second half after the referee gave him a yellow card. Coach Michael Checker impressed with his side's character as well as their skill.
Yeah, they showed what they can really do. I thought they played quite well. And we had obviously a huge penalty count against us too. So we just showed a lot of character. And sometimes over here in Europe, that's just what you got to do.
Australia's next test over there in Europe against England next weekend.
Sunil Awasthi with that report. Look at the news headlines now. At least 210 people have been killed in Iran and Iraq after a powerful magnitude 7.3 earthquake. State media in the two countries says the number of casualties is expected to rise as rescuers search for people trapped under rubble. A war of words has erupted in the Senate, with Green Senator Nick McKim accusing the government of having blood on its hands over the unfolding situation on Manus Island. Senator McKim, who recently visited the island to meet with hundreds of asylum seekers who refused to leave the decommissioned detention centre, questioned whether the government will restore essential services. He also asked when the government will bring them to Australia or resettle them elsewhere. Senator McKim asked the Attorney General George Brandis if he accepts that the government has blood on its hands, but Senator Brandis responded by calling Senator McKim's actions on Manus despicable and contemptible.
You went up to Manus Island with TV cameras in tow for the explicit purpose of fomenting violence. That's what you did.
Greens leader Richard Di Natale has called those extraordinary allegations and has asked them to be withdrawn. And Independent Senator Jackie Lambie could be the latest federal politician to fall victim to the citizenship saga, with the Tasmanian senator checking if she's a citizen of the UK by descent through her father, who was born in Scotland. And a group of church leaders is refusing to leave the West Australian office of the Social Services Minister Christian Porter as they call on the federal government to bring people from offshore processing centres to Australia, including from Manus Island. Well, that's SBS World News Radio for now. You can catch SBS World News with Janice Peterson right across Australia. And our news and features are available on our website, sbs.com.au/news. I'm Greg Dyett. Thanks for listening.